This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. We all know that a good night's sleep is very, very good for us. And when we get a good night's sleep, it's easier to face the day feeling refreshed, renewed, and energetic. But most of us aren't getting enough quality sleep, and that takes a toll on our everyday lives. My guest today, Dr. Lamiz Khorshid, is a clinical health psychologist who coaches individuals, families, executive leaders, and top athletes who want to make healthy sleep a regular part of their lives. She's here today to give us some tools that we all need to learn how to sleep better. Dr. Khorshid, welcome to the show. I'm so honored to have you on, and I'm so excited to talk to you about this today. I think sleep is such an important part of our journeys.
Hi, Erica. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate talking about this segment. I'm excited to share with you some tips about good sleep.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you. Thank you for doing that, because I think there's so many people, especially these days, that are struggling with sleep, that are on sleeping pills. And I know doctors are kind of giving them out without really assessing whether that person has had a history of addiction. And, you know, there's so many things that go into how we get rest these days. So can you tell me a little bit about how you obviously became interested in this field and how you've seen it really become, you know, a good way to live an effective and healthy life?
Absolutely. So I've been studying sleep for many years, starting at the Cleveland Clinic where I did my fellowship. And what made me really interested in this is sleep is linked to so much of our lives. It's linked to our energy, our health, how we store memories, our ability to recover from setbacks. There's even a small part of the brain called the amygdala that's responsible for stress and our ability to regulate stress. And when we don't sleep well, we're not really able to regulate our stress levels or even get through our days in vital ways, feeling awake and refreshed. So I also noticed that most people don't get really good sleep or the right amount of sleep. And the magic number for us is 7 hours of sleep. We're hoping that most people get a good 7 hours of sleep and then that they're getting restorative sleep.
Right. And, you know, with the clients I work with, just counseling people that are changing their lives for the better, there's something that we discuss called sleep hygiene. And I would love for you to share any tips you have today. I know that from what I've heard and the research that I've read that, you know, being on a laptop before you go to bed and having, you know, certain light in your room could lead to you actually having some faulty sleep. Can you speak to that and any other tips you have with the hygiene?
Absolutely. I'd love to speak to that. So one thing that I notice is many people bring their gadgets into the room to sleep. And anytime we're on our tablets or watching television in bed, those things stimulate arousal and they'll actually reverse the quality of sleep that you'll get. The light from the TV and watching TV before bed can interrupt your REM sleep or certain cycles of sleep that you go into at night. The light from your gadgets will also stimulate sleep. So one quick tip for getting good sleep is to keep the gadgets out of the bedroom. And if you're using your telephone as an alarm, just using it as an alarm, really one of the worst things people can do is watch TV in bed or be on their phones, because then you start to pair the bed with arousal and that light will also keep you awake. So one rule of thumb is to keep the bedroom just for sleep or sex. Those are the only two things that should be happening in the room. Everything else should be done outside of the room. So anything like a living space in the bedroom should be moved into the dining room or living room or into the kitchen. Those quick tips will help you get restorative sleep. The other thing I really want to talk about is how long you should stay in bed if you can't sleep. So 30 minutes in bed. If you're unable to sleep, just stay for 30 minutes trying to sleep. And if you can't sleep, get into the other room. Do something boring by a dim light. The longer you stay in bed trying to sleep, you'll actually start to create an association of anxiety or stress and the bedroom, which you don't want to have. So after 30 minutes, go into the other room, do something boring by a very dim light, and then go back to the bedroom, try to sleep for another 30 minutes. If that doesn't work, repeat that cycle all night. And even if you don't get good sleep that night, what will happen is you'll build a really strong sleep drive, a strong need to sleep, which means that second night you'll sleep hard unless you do two things that reverse your sleep drive. Naps reverse your sleep drive, which means if you take them because you're really tired, you'll actually interrupt your sleep at night. And overdosing on caffeine, so anything more than a cup or two in the morning, will affect your sleep at night. It will reverse the hormone that's released for sleep. So after 2 o'clock, I'd cut caffeine out of your day if you can't sleep, and then limit your caffeine intake to a cup or two in the morning time so that you're still building that sleep drive, that strong desire for sleep.
Oh, that's fascinating. And really, that's amazing, amazing information for people listening out there. Because I think that, like you said, we try to get through the day when we're tired. And I know so many people try and drink coffee throughout the day. And I mean, I personally am super sensitive, so I don't drink it past like 10 o'clock. But I don't think everybody's aware of that. So, you know, thank you. And also, just it's so amazing to understand that we have a sleep drive, you know, that we have like this body clock that's always working. And when we disturb that, you know, by anything, it starts to really wreak havoc on our lives. And so many people, I think, don't get the 7 hours. I know I've had conversations with people where they say I get 4 hours, 5 hours, and they look like they're okay. But can you talk to all of us about it's more than what meets the eye? Like, I know that, you know, it affects our metabolism. It you know, when we sleep, we like kind of clean out the soot in our brains. You know, how else is this, even though it may not show, you know, show physically or show up in our lives in a way internally, how does that affect us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not getting enough.
Absolutely. Great question. Lack of sleep affects your immune system, and then it creates a mental fog. So you're not really able to do the kind of problem solving that you'd like to do. You're not able to handle the day-to-day stressors, and you can't really see that on someone's face. So really, when you're not getting that right amount of sleep, you're affecting your immune system. And over time, when you constantly do things that damage the immune system, it leads to chronic diseases. So one night of poor sleep is not really going to move the dial, but chronic days of not sleeping will affect your immune system, which lead to chronic diseases like diabetes or hypertension. But you also brought up a really good point about the number of hours, but that's also linked to the quality hours. And actually, a lot of people are getting poor quality sleep. They might be in the bed for 7 hours, but they might be tossing and turning. And what I often see is many people bring their worries to the bedroom. Mm-hmm. So they're worrying a lot at night, and waking up frequently throughout the night while they're in bed for 7 hours, they're chronically awakening because they're not really taking the time to manage stress during the day. So what we find is if you're not creating a time where you're planning or creating a time to sort of let the brain settle, what happens is you'll wake up a lot at night with many thoughts, with planning, with sending emails in the middle of the night. So what's equally as important as getting the number of hours of sleep is also making sure you're getting restorative sleep. That means creating a time to manage stress during the day or to deal with the things that are on your mind so they don't wake you up in the middle of the night.
Oh, that's absolutely. I love how you put that, because I really believe that time management is so important. And I don't think that we all are that mindful of having ways to manage the stress during the day. And sometimes people just say to themselves, you know what, I'll think about this later when I get home, or I'll get in bed and I'll do my emails and I'll, you know, and then you're literally sitting in it. You're sitting in that muck of like the stress at night, at home, you know, in your solitude or, you know, with your family, and you're not really, you know, you're not really relaxing or probably getting ready to have that restorative sleep.
Absolutely.
No.
I wanted to also mention that what's really, really important is to create a pattern so that we're making the time to relax during the day. You're making the time to deal with those stressors so they're not waking you up at night. But what's also equally as important is you create a pattern for yourself that you're sleeping around the same time and you're waking around the same time. So that way you're creating a climate for sleep. So your body, it has a circadian rhythm. It has a time when it gets sleepy and times when it wakes you up. This is why on weekends when you can sleep in if you're not working, your body still wants to wake you up at the same time as a weekday. So yes. You know, the reason the worst day of the week is Mondays for most people is they've shifted their circadian rhythm so much over the weekend. They've stayed out a little bit too late. they've stayed in bed a couple extra hours, whether they're tossing and turning during the time. But one really good tip for creating good sleep is to keep your body on the rhythm that it prefers, sleeping at the same time and waking up the same time, even on the weekends, so that you have more energy for the Mondays.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is the restorative sleep? Like what, you know, people are asking out there, like, you know, saying to themselves, how do I make sure that I get that good sleep? You know, I know there's some technology available these days, the Fitbit and different things out there that kind of do track your sleep. But for us everyday people that really aren't maybe, you know, so intuitive with all the technology and gadgets, how do we become more aware of that so that we could help ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. These gadgets that are out there, like the Fitbit trackers, will calculate how many hours you're actually in bed and how many of it is restorative sleep and how restless you are. So I find that those are helpful for clients. But if you don't even really need to buy something fancy, what I often do is have people create a sleep log. So write down the time that you go to sleep and then the time that you wake up and any times that you're awake for extended periods at night. So if you keep a little log right by your nightstand, you'll be able to log this. Some people tell me, I don't remember what time I woke up in the middle of the night. That's a good thing. That means you weren't up for extended periods of time. So what the goal of this is to make sure you're creating a pattern, that you're sleeping at the same time every night within an hour, and that you're waking at the same time in the mornings within an hour. And on nights on the weekend when you might stay up too late, that you're still waking up at that same time the next day to keep the rhythm. Your log is going to reflect whether you're doing that most days of the week. Because if there's a sleep problem, you're probably shifting your rhythm too much and then creating some habits the next day, whether it's naps or caffeine, that are interrupting the regularity of it. You know, the other thing we should talk about, Erica, I want to make sure to tell your audience about this, is how alcohol affects sleep. So when you have a nightcap or you have a drink before bed, some people use that to fall asleep, it actually interrupts your REM sleep and your deeper states of sleep. So what you'll find is it'll put you to sleep, but it will wake you up 4 hours later, and it will be hard to get deeper quality sleep. The other thing that affects it is sleep medication. So many people like their sleep medication because they say it helps them fall asleep. But what the audience should know is there is no sleep medicine out there that gives you the quality of sleep that we're looking for. They don't give you as much restorative sleep. So you'll wake up in the morning with more of a fog, even though it put you to sleep at night. The last thing I want to tell you about sleep habits, too, that are really important are diet. So if people are eating late at night to fall asleep, or just eating and going to sleep, they won't get restorative sleep. So even if you're in bed for 7 hours, you won't have that restorative sleep that we need.
That's so great to know. So, I mean, it's really important for people to be mindful of these things, to not eat super late and to not, you know, obviously drink every night before they go to sleep, and also try, if they are on sleep medication, if there's a possibility of getting off of it, I always think that that's a better option. But as you know, like psychologically, people, it's very hard. I was just talking to someone this morning about this, who was addicted to Ambien and other sleep meds. And, you know, she was saying, you know, I even if I took a quarter of my sleep med, just the fact that I took it, I could fall asleep. But if I didn't take it, I mentally was, you know, setting herself up to fail. Basically, she was becoming anxious and mentally, you know, kind of nervous about not being able to sleep. So, you know how that cycle goes. So for people out there that are maybe thinking about getting off their sleep meds, is there any advice you would like to give them in terms of telling yourself something, or, you know, any practices that could possibly help them? Because I know a lot of it's mental, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. I really love that you brought up this point, and I think it was great, and I'm sure she's working with a psychiatrist or whoever prescribed that to titrate or to start to decrease the amount of that Ambien medication. What's also important for her to know and to be rest assured that your body will build a very strong drive. So even if she goes 1 or 2 nights with poor sleep, that drive will get so strong that she will eventually sleep very well. So if she can be patient enough for a couple days of poor sleep, maybe some irritability that comes with that or some mental fog, the third night she's going to sleep very hard, and she can start by creating a rhythm to that. The other really, really helpful tip is diaphragmatic breathing. And the reason this is so important is this is a natural way to induce calm in your body. So your audience, if you're when you're listening to this, you could put one hand on your belly, and when you breathe in from your nose, allow your belly to expand and then collapse at a slower pace. And what happens when you breathe in at a count of about 3 to 4 and breathe out at a count of 3 or 4, using your diaphragm to do the inhale and exhale, it actually activates a calming system in the body that works like a medication. It activates the parasympathetic response. And what that does is it calms the entire nervous system down so that you'll fall right into sleep after 10 or 15 minutes of that.
Oh, thank you for sharing that too. I believe in breath work, and I've seen breath work, you know, in so many ways heal people. So I really appreciate you bringing that into the conversation about sleep. And I'm assuming too that this would help anybody if they're kind of laying in bed and it's within that first 10 minutes to try and go to the breathing. Would that be also a good way for them to try and fall back asleep?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So the tension of the breath is a really good tool. Not only does it activate that parasympathetic, reducing your heart rate, bringing the whole nervous system down, creating calm, but the other thing it does is it brings the mind into a focus area. And what happens for many people is when they can't sleep, their mind starts to wander into what they need to do, what they haven't done, what's due the next day. And when you allow the mind to wander and talk back to all of those thoughts, you create dialogue. What happens is it creates insomnia. But when you notice your mind wandering to the thoughts and instead shift it to the breath over and over again, keep coming back to the breath, what will happen is your entire body will calm down and your mind has a focal point. If you don't give it that focal point, it will just sit there and worry and think and even stress about the idea of not sleeping. And the more you stress about the idea of not sleeping, the more you create insomnia. Another way of looking at this is I'm not sleeping tonight. It's not a big deal. I'm going to create a strong sleep drive. I might be tired tomorrow. I'll live through that. So really talking back to some of those fears. And a lot of times when people can't sleep, they go into worst case scenario. I won't be functional. I won't be able to work, but actually you will be. There's probably no instance where you haven't been able to do that in the past. So really taking those worry thoughts, bringing them back to the breath, and knowing one night of insomnia isn't really going to move the dial, because the drive is going to get so strong in a day, you'll be able to sleep well.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And also like you were saying too, it's using mindfulness, really, because it's bringing your mind into the present moment and not worrying about the future or worrying about the past. And I know mindfulness is something that you, obviously know a lot about. And I know this is a big subject matter, but I know that you also discuss mindfulness to increase productivity, to prevent burnout. And I know that that also obviously is tied to sleep, because if we don't sleep, we will burn out. You know, our jobs and our moods are so affected by our quality of sleep too. And I know you touched a little bit about how it does affect our moods. It just like, you know, we have something that we say in the addiction field, like, don't let yourself become too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, because those are the things that kind of lead to maybe craving a drink or drugs or something that may not be healthy for you. So I do want to just ask you quickly about how we can make sure that our moods stay intact. And when we kind of see ourselves dipping up and down, how to maybe create more of a balance.
Yeah, what a great question. So, Erica, exercise is one of the best ways. It's actually the only natural way to get the deepest quality of sleep. And the reason I'm bringing up exercise, even just 10 minutes, is it boosts your mood. You know, studies on mood and anxiety, we know that exercising for 30 minutes of cardiovascular activity is equally as effective to treat depression or anxiety as a drug. So the reason I'm bringing this up is if you're interested in maintaining a really healthy mood state, in spite of not sleeping, a 30-minute brisk walk will help those endorphins and help some of the brain chemistry that we're looking for in improving your mood. And mindfulness that you brought up is one of the best ways to help improve your mood and to decrease anxiety. And I want to tell your audience briefly what mindfulness is. Mm-hmm. It's really this concept of bringing your mind to the moment, rather than entertaining all the thoughts of worries, fears, and regrets. And the average person, if you took an average person walking down the street, 80% of their thoughts on average are negative. And your mind does this. It's always in a worry state or a regret state. It's always trying to protect you from anything that could go wrong or that did go wrong and you should learn from. So the reason I'm bringing that up is it's a big percentage.
Yeah, high number. Yeah. I'm so surprised.
Yeah, very surprising for many people. I tell you that with the other notion, you can actually rewire your brain. And the way to do this would be to keep bringing your mind back to the now. So every time it wanders into the future, into a worry, which nothing really gets solved in your head worrying. So bringing your mind back to your five senses is the easiest way to do this. What am I doing right now? Where are my feet? Where is my body? How is my breath? What am I smelling? What do I hear? So continuously bringing yourself back to the here and now is one of the concepts of mindfulness. And the other is our relationship to the now. Are we judging the now always? And are we anticipating what's going to go wrong? When that happens, again, guide yourself back to the present moment. And as people do this, what you notice is anxiety goes down and mood states improve because now you're awake to all the things around you. And many of the things around you carry a sense of beauty, and you're just becoming awake to them.
Yeah.
So and I think that there's two things. Retraining the brain.
Oh, totally. And I write it's a whole chapter in my book, Rewired. It's like a big, it's a big thing in my life. But I do know that there's a lot of people when I say to them too, you know, go to gratitude because being grateful for what you have in the moment or being able to, like you said, use your senses and say, look up. I always tell my clients, look up, look at the trees, look out at the, you know, the birds, whatever it is, like bring yourself to the present. But I do know that there's a lot of people that struggle with thinking they're not doing enough with their life. You know, they're always so hard on themselves. Like you said, the 80%, that's a huge number of negative talk. But let's say you do bring yourself back to the moment and you say, you know, I'm not where I want to be in the moment, or I'm not doing enough, or should I just be relaxing when I could be actually getting work done? How do we get people to see that, you know, to just do their best and to be more compassionate to themselves? And why is it that some people always have to keep doing or being in, you know, or being somewhere, or do, you know, what is that incessant like chatter?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So there's a couple things I hear in there. One is everyone needs a sense of purpose, something they're working towards. And oftentimes if we feel like we don't have that sense of purpose, it could create depression and anxiety and worry. So the first step would be to say, do I feel like I have a sense of purpose? And if you're not sure what that means, I would sit back and say, what are my top three values? What are the things that mean the most to me? And are my behaviors consistent with that? So if one of my values is helping people, how are my daily behaviors consistent or inconsistent with that? Because what you'll find is if your behaviors don't line up with your values, you're going to have this anxiety and this worry and this dissatisfaction. So I would start by making sure that your behaviors line up with your values. And then if there are things that you want to accomplish, that's healthy, but make sure that you're not just ruminating about what you haven't done. Instead, take what you want and set it into what we call SMART goals, which Erica, I'm sure you're very familiar with. But these are specific and measurable, attainable, realistic and time-based goals. So for example, if your goal is to advance in your career, that's a very vague statement. I would want to know what specifically you want to accomplish. How would I be able to measure that in a week? What's attainable for you? Is it realistic? And the last thing I want your audience to remember is small changes add up over time. So if you were doing one thing towards your goal each day, towards the end of a year, you would have probably made quite a big dent in that goal. So remember to make sure that your goals are specific, that they're aligned with your values, and that you're doing one thing each day towards the bigger picture.
Absolutely. And it all comes down, like you said, with when you're, you know, you become, I think people become more happy, more balanced, more aligned when their behaviors do line up with their values. And then also being authentic to themselves. You know, I think that that 80%, that percentage is so high because I think most of the time we think that we should be pleasing this person or doing this for our boss or doing this for our spouse. And we don't really necessarily speak our truths, or we become disconnected and fragmented from our true selves. And I think that's a issue when we're not mindful of staying authentic to ourselves. And I know that that creates stress, which creates sleep issues. I mean, this is all connected. I mean, this is just one big, we're all, you know, this is one big way that we could be more mindful and see how all this does play into our overall happiness.
Erica, I can't tell you how many clients I meet with, whether it's individually or in relationship, where they say their biggest need is to be authentic to themselves, or to be in relationship and feeling like they can be themselves and not worry about what other people are constantly thinking. And what I notice mm-hmm. in working with people, some of the biggest advancements come as they build their relationship with themselves. When they stop from that space of self-criticism, rumination, and they move into the place of acceptance and goal setting and moving towards the next chapter in their life. And this is such a big shift, because many people just spend their time criticizing all the things they haven't done, should have done, or what other people think mm-hmm. about them, until they start to cultivate a relationship of self-love and literally practice loving oneself and meeting goals. And once you meet goals that are difficult and you overcome those, you build self-esteem.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so happy you shared this. This is such an amazing wealth of information. And I know my audience is going to get, you know, so much from this. So I appreciate you being with me and talking about this really important subject matter today. Dr. Khorshid, I'm going to give everybody your website. It's Dr. DrLameES, Lameese, and then khorshid.com, correct?
Yeah, at gmail.com. Yes, thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you all for joining me today, and be well.